are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
And Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We're on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard on the World Wide Web. That's like the web that Ellen talks about all the time, like a spider.
That's
a web.
That's right. 1510 WWBC is where you can get the show right away. Actually, you can listen to it on demand anywhere in the world just by clicking that on demand button, and you'll get us right away. And then all of our shows are archived on our CETAMediaInc.com page, which is our website. It has all of the shows for the last, 10 years archived right there on the side. You can search by name. You can search by topic. You know, so it's fantastic. And once again, Sita, the amount of guests that you get, just incredible.
It takes skill.
Well,
it's a lot of skill to be able to talk to people, understand where they're coming from, understand their purpose on Earth, why they're here, and what they're doing to help humanity, right?
And it's your personality that attracts them.
Well, such a person is Claire Ellis, who's going to be on the second segment speaking on behalf of the Zonta Club of Melbourne and Zonta International as well. So thank you for being here with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and Claire's, you've always been a friend of the show, and you've always supported Viewpoint with Sita and Friends from the beginning. And we like what you guys do because you do take a stand against human trafficking, domestic violence, and you do for others what people think about, but they don't do it. So, yes. I mean, if somebody wanted to tune in today and go on the website and listen so that they could hear what Zonta International does, do you have the website handy?
ZontaSpaceCoast.org.
Right, and that's Claire Ellis.
That's right.
She's also my neighbor.
Sure, that's posted.
and her grandson and I became good friends as well. We'll give a shout out to Johnny.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We need more people like Johnny who gets involved in issues, mm-hmm. you know. But Ellen, of course, I go out of my way sometime to find people to call in on the show.
Yes.
And I was sitting at home and I was reading this article in the Florida Today. And I said, oh my goodness, this article is really, really good. It's an article about contact tracing and the outbreak of COVID and people saying that we're safe at home, but they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then I looked at the article who wrote it and I said, oh my goodness, it's Mr. Gary Stein. He's the gentleman who's calling in on our show today. So that was kind of nice.
But topical and timely.
Yeah, so before we go to him, I worked this weekend, and I just want to, say to all our listeners and our friends who listen to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, wearing a mask when you're not in your social bubble is not that difficult. Mm. We are wearing our mask 8 to 12 hours a day to take care of your loved ones and ourselves. We don't want to take the virus to home to our friends and family. And if somebody has to wear a mask because they have to go to the store for an hour or they have to go someplace for an hour or two, and you don't know who's around you, You're not just helping us, you're helping yourself as well.
And let me tell you something, it's made me make lists, so I am in and out of the store a lot quicker.
Right.
I'm much more effective and efficient with my time when I'm outside of the house, so I don't know that it's a bad thing, because and maybe the motivation is to get the mask off, but regardless, I'm much more efficient.
Claire, you're wearing your mask most places.
Yes, yes.
Every place.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the thing is, you don't know who's asymptomatic. You don't know who's got the disease and will spread it to you. Like now Dr. Fauci is saying, you know, for Thanksgiving, try your best and have a socially distanced Thanksgiving, because you don't want to have an ICU Christmas, right?
Right, right, exactly.
So I think this is not even a political thing. And I don't know why wearing a mask became a sign of strength or a sign of weakness, but it should have never been that way. All 50 states, every single governor, whether Republican or Democrat, should have been on the same page and were protecting the American citizens from COVID-19. And on that, we're going to bring in our call-in guest, Mr. Gary Stein, who, for our listening audience, I'll just give them a quick background about him. He is a public health advisor and a disease intervention specialist. He received his master's in public health from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Health. And I am very grateful that he's taken the time to call in. He's also been a blogger for the Huffington Post. He has written for Context Florida, Health News Florida, and Florida Politics and other magazines. And like all of us in this studio, he's a like-minded individual who cares about life on Earth and that people should care about each other. So, Mr. Gary Stein, thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you for inviting me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just went through your bio, and I was telling Ellen and our friend Claire Ellis, who's here representing the Zonta Club, a little bit about you. And I read your article, and it's spot on. So tell us a little bit about yourself before we delve into what's going on with our country and how we can help here in Florida and all over the other 50 states.
Well, education-wise, I got my bachelor's degree in microbiology and public health from Michigan State University, where towards the end of that, I was actually working on the first steps towards screening interferon. And then later on in life, I went ahead and got a master's degree in public health from Johns Hopkins over in Baltimore, and basically concentrating on public health education, public health promotion, and public health policy. So we could spread the wealth of information to try to save larger portions of our population, saving millions at a time kind of thing. And I worked for the better part of two decades with the Centers for Disease Control, working on the HIV epidemic, syphilis epidemics, outbreaks, TB epidemics, and that kind of thing. And a lot of that involved contact tracing, something that is a tool that's been around for a long time, but is being highly underused today.
Right. And so, you know, a lot of us are looking at what's going on, and we're shaking our heads. We have over 250,000 deaths. And, you know, people are taking a position one way or the other. But, you know, washing your hands, wearing a face mask, socially distancing, it works. But you want to add one more thing onto that. And you want to add on the contact tracing, which is important. Because once you trace, you can treat and isolate. So tell me a little bit about that.
Contact tracing, the whole preposition behind it is very simple. If you find somebody who has tested positive for a disease, you sit down with them, make certain that they, first off, have got the treatment that they need, and secondly, make certain they isolate so they, in an infectious state, can't infect other people, and make certain they have the resources they need to either to stay home or make certain they go to the hospital. And then the next step is to find out who they had been with within the last period of time when they could have possibly been infectious. And if you can get everybody who is infected either at home or in the hospital, or anybody that they've been in contact with, to stay home or in the hospital, then the general public is safer. Because like you said before, we really have no idea who has been infected, so therefore they worry about doing things like shutdowns. Well, shutdowns have had severe impact on the economy as well as mental health of people out there who are not used to staying inside 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with their loved ones, who sometimes drive them crazy as well.
Right. So, but why is it so difficult for people to do what you just said? I mean, in the old days, they used to say, if you have a cold, stay home. If you have the flu, stay home. Why are people all of a sudden not paying attention that if you have a fever, if you're coughing, if you know something is wrong with you, why are you going out to work or to the store or other places where you know very well? Is it because we have lost the art of caring for each other?
That, in fact, and that over the years when we've had economic downturns, and we're having an economic downturn right now, people can't afford to stay home when they're sick. So they go to work regardless. Sometimes they go to work because of the fact that they can't afford child care. You know, that kind of situation.
Right. I think that's where, when we all say, well, I'm an essential worker. You're essential not because they need you at work, but because you need to work in order to pay your bills.
Exactly right. And if you don't go to work and if you don't get paid, then you, and your bills don't get paid, then you are even greater impact, at least in your own mind. Although you don't realize that when you go to work, you can infect anywhere between 1 and 100 people, depending on and where you are. And those are the things we have to be concerned about in regards to our infectiousness. And I talk about the D's. It has to do with how far, the distance of how far away you are from people. They talk about 6 feet. The density of the population. Are there 25 people in that room, 30 people in that room? And, of course, the distance and the density. And I'm now going on with my own spiel, and I forgot the third one. But anyways, what the whole idea is, duration, of course, as to how long you stay in that one spot. So if you look at the duration, the density, and the distance you are between people, you can keep yourself safer. And, of course, it always helps to wear a mask. Now, cloth masks, even the paper masks we have out there, are not 100% going to protect you from the disease. But, again, if there are less people out there with the infection, you're safer out there while wearing your mask, in that you not only not give it to other people, but you have a greater chance of not getting it yourself, as long as somebody else out there is wearing a mask.
Right. So what happened? Because we were on track to mediate this outbreak in May, right? And then suddenly the outbreak got worse. Florida instituted Florida says, okay, safe at home isolation is not working. We need to reopen the economy. They reopened the economy and trusted that individuals, human beings like you and I and Ellen and Claire and all of us sitting in the studio here, that human beings would do the right thing. What happened since May to now?
Well, first off, what happened is that, we started reopening the economy because there was humongous amount of pressure to reopen the economy, in that we can't expect the government to cover all the needs of absolutely everybody.
Yes.
And so therefore, they figured economically we cannot stay open. And so also there was a bit of politicalization involved as well in regards to saying that this disease is not as bad as they say it is. It's propaganda. There was a multitude of misinformation being put out on social media about plandemics and things of that sort that was all full of totally fallacious information that was getting people under the belief that they had heard that there was a disease out there, but it's 99.99% not fatal, so therefore you should go about your day. And that is just not the case. I mean, we live in a nation of 330 million people. If even 1% of the population dies, we're still talking about over 3 million people dead. That is an awful lot of people.
Right, but you write in the article, Mr. Gary Stein, you wrote that centralized contact tracing is a process that served the public during outbreaks for syphilis, gonorrhea, tuberculosis, HIV, and Ebola. Why is that not taken seriously now? I mean, have you spoken to anybody in Tallahassee or anywhere else? Because you make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't understand why. I mean, your article should be like on everybody's refrigerator door. Really?
I have talked to Tallahassee, but they have not talked to me. There has been, a politicalization. Our governor, Ron DeSantis, actually brought around a gentleman by the name of Dr. Scott Atlas, who is not a public health doctor. Like, he has no public health experience whatsoever. He's a retired radiologist. And yet he is pushing what is called the Great Barrington Declaration, which was put together by a bunch of doctors. And this declaration was signed by over 15,000 people, most of which were fake signatures with people with names like Professor Eddie Banana, that kind of thing. And it basically was saying that we need to go to what is called herd immunity, which means that if we get everybody possibly infected out there, then the amount of new infections is going to go down. Well, if there's any kind of fatality whatsoever associated with an infection, that kind of thing does not work. Herd immunity only works when we're talking about the amount of people being vaccinated out there is high enough to keep the spread from going out, not widespread spread of a disease which has a high fatality index, which is what COVID does.
Right. But you spent 15 years, Mr. Gary Stein, with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as a public health advisor and disease intervention specialist. And there are many Gary Steins out there. It seems as though people don't want to use science and common sense as well as faith and put it together. And they can. I don't understand, because contact tracing is valuable, right? But it's also valuable if people put science, common sense, and yes, faith together. What has happened to our nation that people don't want to listen to scientists, somebody such as yourself?
Again, a lot of it has to do with politics. A lot of it has to do with fear. I mean, when this infection first started out, I started publishing on a daily basis on my Facebook page all the numbers of people who were being infected and where they're being infected, and the number of new cases versus the number of hospitalizations versus the number of deaths. And I was being called out as a fearmonger. And I said, I'm not a fearmonger. I'm just giving you the tools you need in order to stay safe. I mean, if you're afraid, that's on you. But it's not a matter of fear. It's a matter of information. It's a matter of knowledge that you can use to keep yourself and the people you know, or even the people you don't know, safe. We are all in this together. And most countries understand that. But in this country, there's been a huge, huge pushback against science, not only on climate change, but on other things. They basically state that if we have faith, then we will be okay. But as I mentioned to you before, there's an old story about faith where a gentleman who was drowning was out there, and a gentleman came by with a boat and said, I'm coming here to save you. And the gentleman drowning said, no, faith will protect me. And he drowned, and when he went up to heaven, God said, what did you do? I sent you a boat. I mean, the whole idea is that faith is involved. It also involves knowing what things God gives us to help to take care of things. It's not a matter of just faith alone. It's a matter of living in the real world and using those tools that have been given to us.
That's
by
correct.
God or by whatever religion you have. And contact tracing is something that was given to us possibly by God, definitely by science, because we know from history that we've been able to squash various diseases, like smallpox, polio. You don't even see those around anymore.
Well, I saw an article this morning where a group of evangelical doctors is asking churches to halt in-person services, saying that it is contributing to the illness because we're selfish. It was a good article. I think it was on Forbes magazine, I think. I'm not sure. I'll have to double check that. But I mean, I can't stress enough, being a healthcare worker, that wearing a face mask works, and social distancing as well as washing our hands. And now I would certainly say we need to start adding on the contact tracing. But where do we go from here? Because, I mean, we have a lot of people, like you said before, who are not used to being at home. And we're watching millions of people now are depressed and lonely, and they can't see their loved ones. I mean, where do we go from here, Mr. Stein? How do we help each other?
Well, the first thing, of course, is personal responsibility to the rest of the world. And that is that when you do go out, wear a mask. Number one, in part because, first, you don't know if you have it. And number two, if you don't know you have it, you don't know who you're going to give it to. And it may be a loved one, it may be somebody you don't know, but you'll give it to somebody else. Who'll give it to somebody else? We'll give it to somebody else, and this pandemic will continue on. It's a certain amount of responsibility to the world as well as to yourself that you give them, you use a mask, that you continue doing social distancing, that you avoid crowds, that you continue to wash your hands religiously, and to make certain that you don't touch a surface that may be infected and bring it back to your face when you're not wearing a mask. And these simple things in this particular type of infectious airborne disease can resolve it. But we do need contact tracing and a centralized, robust contact tracing to get this done. This is how we utilized the smallpox vaccine, by looking where all the outbreaks were and making certain everybody that came in contact with the smallpox and those who had it got treated and isolated away from everybody else so that nobody else would catch it again and it wouldn't continue on. And that is what we have to do with this. We had, in not too many years ago, an Ebola outbreak in Africa that one gentleman snuck on an airplane and ended up in New York City with an active case of Ebola. And Ebola is a very, very nasty disease. It's got a fatality rate of over 70%, which means that if you catch it, the likelihood is that you will die. Your body actually liquefies on the inside. You start bleeding out of every orifice.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on CNN when we had the outbreak. Yeah, it was awful.
If it weren't for robust contact tracing, where we isolated him and everybody else he came in contact with, we would have had a major Ebola outbreak in this country. And we often don't think of things as happening when they happen in other countries, but we are living in a very mobile world, and people can get to us from wherever they are. We had a tuberculosis outbreak here in Florida in around 2011, and actually Governor Scott was trying to withhold any information in regards to it. It happened around Jacksonville. And tuberculosis is a bug that grows so slow you can't culture it, and so therefore it creeps through the population, and it really does a lot of damage to those people who have it.
Yeah. So you're saying that the premise is pretty simple: contact the infected to ensure treatment, and isolate and prevent the spread, and then interview them so that their contacts can be tested, then quarantine them until we're certain they're not infected, then get them treatment, and all this could be done by obeying the HIPAA laws as well.
That's right. It's all done on a highly confidential basis. Nobody else needs to know your information. We just need to make certain that those people who have it or have been in contact with it get isolated and get the resources they need to isolate. You know, food, shelter, whatever they need to be away from their loved ones for a short period of time, be it 2 weeks if you're in contact with somebody, and you can reduce the amount of infection in the general public and make the general public safer. And therefore, we wouldn't be putting as much money into having to close down our economy if we just took care of the people who were infected or had come in contact with it. And also, it would make testing far, far more effective. You can test everybody, you know, in an entire town when only 10 need to be actually tested. And what is obviously the most effective as far as cost is concerned? Because tests do cost money. Not only just the money, but also is the time it takes to go ahead and run those tests. Because if you overwhelm your labs with tests that are all going to be negative because if people are at low risk, then that increases the amount of time it takes to get your results back. What good is a result in a disease that will make you ill within 3 to 4 days if you can't get your results until 7 or 8 days?
True, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I've been tested over 17 times, and I've been negative every time, but you're actually correct about that, because so many of us are writing our date of birth and the date and swabbing ourselves and sticking a thing in, and it's a lot of tests to go out every week at my facility. But anyways, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about the vaccine? Because people are talking about the vaccine and the efficacy rate of it. But here's the thing, you need healthcare professionals to administer the vaccine. You need alcohol pads, you need syringes, you need manpower, you need a place to store the vaccine. And then we need to know who's going to be able to get the vaccine first. I mean, are rich nations going to be favored over the poor nations? I mean, these are things that I think they should be thinking about right now in Washington, D.C.
Well, Washington, D.C. decided they wanted to break away from the World Health Organization and go off on their own in regards to vaccine production and vaccine distribution. They moved away from what is called the COVAX program, that's COVAX, that was put out through the World Health Organization, which is basically a cadre of a whole bunch of countries who said, as soon as we get this vaccine, we will distribute it as widely as possible across the entire world. And the United States said, never mind, we'll do it alone, we'll take care of ourselves, our vaccine will belong just to us. And that's where they're going. India created a program which said, over half the vaccine that they create will belong to India, the rest will belong to the rest of the world. Because they are so, so highly populated over there. Every other country in this world are thinking about the worldwide pandemic expansion, whereas the United States, they're talking about, we have ours. And it's going to cost us, too, in money alone. If you take a look at Pfizer's vaccine, which just came out, which has to be, by the way, stored at 70 below, which is a logistics nightmare, but they didn't want to put thimerosal or anything inside of it for preservative. But their vaccine costs around $25 a dose, and the one that came out of Moderna costs about $20 a dose. AstraZeneca, out of Oxford University in England, who put out their medication, which, by the way, are in the COVAX program, is $2.50 a vaccine. Number one, because they promised that they were not going to make a profit during the pandemic.
Oh, Mr. Stein, I think Claire has a question for you. For our listeners who are tuning in, our guest who is speaking with us is Mr. Gary Stein, and he's calling in. I forgot what you said. You were calling in from what part of Florida are you in now?
Pasco County,
right up the road. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Gary Stein spent 15 years with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as a public health advisor and disease intervention specialist. And we are so proud to have him on air with us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And my in-studio guest, Claire Ellis, has a question for you.
Mr. Stein, I was just wondering, when you talked about the Pfizer vaccine that has to be kept at negative 112 degrees, is that something that's an easy thing to do? Is that going to take very special cases? And I mean, I'm just wondering. I don't know.
Well, the thing it'll do is it'll affect the logistics of dispersion of the vaccine, because you have to have transport units as well as units on site where it's being given out that can maintain that temperature. Because within 45 minutes after being released from that temperature, the heat will affect the vaccine and break it down to the point where it is not effective.
Wow.
Yeah,
need to have to get it out.
Yeah, because I know what Claire's thinking, because the Zonta International is all over the world, and there are areas where there are live human beings living that we're concerned now, will they be able to have access to this vaccine?
I mean, the other vaccines are having a better chance. The one, I believe, in AstraZeneca, has the vaccines actually encased in what is called a liposome, which is a small ball of fat, which protects it from the heat. So you can actually give it out at refrigerated temperatures as opposed to frozen.
It's going to be a nightmare to administer all the... Because I know, Ryan, when we have to give the flu shots at our facility, you know, we have to take the temperatures before... Then you have to administer the flu shot, and then you have to take temperatures for 3 days after for each patient. Can you imagine with COVID-19, if we have to give that to our patients, how many temperatures, blood pressures, whatever, it's going to be a nightmare. But before you go off air, we have 1 minute or 2 minutes left, I think, of this segment, Mr. Stein. Just to move away from this quickly, do you see any help on the horizon financially for people who need assistance here in the state of Florida, who have lost jobs due to COVID-19, who contracted the disease and can't return to work? Have you heard of any assistance that's on the way?
Well, that again has a lot to do with politics, unfortunately, in this country. And the Senate in particular has blocked every opportunity for putting out plans that could give more money out to the public to help them survive. And that is one of the reasons I've been pushing the contact tracing program for so long, because it would reduce the need for so much money to have to go out to help to take care of people's jobs if the jobs aren't being shut down, if restaurants are at least allowed to able to have a larger amount of people in there so they wouldn't have to shut down.
So the businesses can remain open.
We're in need, unfortunately.
So the businesses can remain open if we can push to get the contact tracing, so those who are infected will stay home. And those who can go to work will go and do the best they can. So we don't have to dish out that much money to people. I think it makes sense.
Yes.
The contact tracing program requires money to be able to hire contact tracers. There needs to be tens of thousands of them around the country to have this done. Because if they can't do their job in a timely manner, if they don't get in contact with the people that they have to get in contact with for 4 or 5 days, what they've done is just become moot. So they have to have enough people to be able to contact everybody who's infected within a very short period of time, make certain that those people get paid, and again, make certain that those who have to stay home to either isolate if they're infected or quarantine if they've been in contact with anybody, and make certain that they have the resources to stay home, food, rent, whatever else they need. And you don't have to give money to absolutely everybody because you're shutting everything down.
Once again, the time goes so fast on these segments. Thank you so much for calling in. Do you have a website that people can get in touch with you, Mr. Stein?
Not on this particular topic, but I plan on putting together a podcast like yours right now with it to talk to the headliners across the country who are working on this, and okay. I will bring that to your attention as soon as it's put up.
Excellent. Well, keep us posted, and thank you again for calling in, and we are going to take a quick station break here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
To Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. This is Ellen O'Neill, Sita's sidekick. We had a great first session with Mr. Greg Stein, who is a blogger. We had a great discussion about the COVID, how to keep yourself safe, and a great article
Gary Stein.
Right, and he gave a Gary Stein, and he wrote a great article in the Florida Today. We do want to kind of do a little bit of a recap. We know you have a lot of choices of how you're going to spend Christmas this year. And there's lots of folks, obviously, that are looking for help. And one of our guests that we had on a few weeks ago, Project Noel, they're presenting an Adopt a Child for Christmas. And you can drop off any Christmas gifts to Chase Bank, location any location in Brevard County, Zachary's Restaurant in Cape Canaveral, True to You Tattoo in Melbourne, Clown 9 Mattress and Furniture in Merritt Island, which is one of our sponsors, and also with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here at the studio here in West King Street in Cocoa. So you can do an online toy drive. They have a Facebook page under Project Noel Brevard County. So once again, we're just trying to support all of the guests and everyone who supports us every year. And another great guest to tell a great story, right, a few weeks ago.
Right. And now we go right to Claire Ellis.
Yes.
Thank
right,
you for being Zonta here with, to chat about the Zonta Club and what. So let's go right to it. Zonta of Melbourne is hosting a luminary fundraising opportunity. And you want to tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends how to get involved.
Yes. Thank you so much, Sita. We appreciate your cooperation with us and always wanting to be so supportive of us and our goals. The Luminaria Project, what we're looking at is bringing awareness to violence against women and girls. We're all about the awareness of it. So during the 16 days of activism from November 25th to December 10th, these are the days of activism all over the world for violence against women. And what we're doing is selling luminaries, six luminaries for $10. And what we're asking the public to do and is place these in your business, on your porch, on your sidewalks. Light them up on the night of December 4th at precisely 7:30. And this will hopefully bring more and more awareness to violence against women. And during that time, if you're gathered with your family, of course, always social distance, whatever is necessary to keep you safe. If you need to remember someone or talk about someone in your family, in your life that you know may be a survivor or may be in the throes of domestic violence, try to educate each other, help each other. And we are so adamant about bringing awareness to this situation going on. And this is not just going on here. These are Zontians all over the world. Here, we're already on the billboards off 95. We're asking businesses also if they put an orange light outside their business during these days. Everything orange. We want to turn everything orange.
And this is happening December 4th. So maybe people could kind of modify it in their own way and maybe invite your friends to come socially distance in your yard with a hot cup of hot chocolate.
Yes.
You know, like have hot chocolate and light your candles. And then what happens? Do you then release the bags up in the air?
No, they stay lit for the period of time that the luminary stays lit that's in the bag. So it will be for quite a few hours.
Okay, good. And so nothing is going up.
Nothing is going up in the air.
That's good. That's nice.
And you can get all the information on the bags, how to get them, how to pay for them at zontaspacecoast.org. Or you may call 321-952-1443. And our members will try to help with pickup and delivery. And we're hoping if we have many in one neighborhood, we may come out and try to do some photos as well on that evening.
Very nice.
I know. And everybody's looking for an activity, an outdoor activity to do, right? So yes. I suppose that would be
so
one.
So Sita and I will be getting our bags.
Thank you.
I will get a lot of bags because I'm going to add in some hot chocolate and invite a few people over.
Thank you so much.
I will. So I guess this is one of the things that Zonta International and Zonta of Melbourne is doing to bring attention to violence against women and children. What else are you all doing?
Well, one thing that people don't realize is the child marriages that go on all over the world. And what we're trying to do, because that when there's many child marriages, unfortunately, many children in other parts of the world and in the United States think that it's okay for someone to abuse you in a marriage. And that is just so wrong. And so what we're doing is we have a project through UNICEF and 12 countries all over the world where we're trying to do everything we can to educate and stop child marriage. And here in our own country as well, and you may not be aware about Florida, Florida changed its marriage laws, and we were hoping that it would just be strictly 18, but they didn't do that. But what they did to protect children was the judge can sign an order if there's a request from the parents that the girl can be 17, but she cannot marry anyone older than 19 in the state of Florida. If there's a judge's order below 18. So that prevents child marriage. So we were happy about that. So that changed in our own state.
Yeah, whenever the legislature come together to do something to help children,
yes,
we all, as women, we appreciate it. As humans, right?
Yes.
So if somebody wanted to buy some of the candles, where can they get them? They just go online?
The number that I gave, and then they will be contacted, and we will pick up a cash or check upon delivery if that's what they want to do. There's several different ways they can handle that. It's all there, and they just have to go to zontaspacecoast.org or 321-952-1443. And our president of Zonta International, Sharon Lagenbach, she stated, as we're facing the COVID pandemic, gender-based violence is on the rise, and more than ever now, it's essential that we work together to end violence against women and girls through our program worldwide. So they're doing many different things all over the world to say no to violence against women campaign.
Right. Well, we've had these discussions before too. It's like everybody thinks it's not in my backyard. And we've talked about so many instances that have happened right here in Brevard County, really close to us,
yes,
specifically. So what are some of the warning signs that people should be looking for, especially this time of year? I'll give one. I remember specifically this instance where a white van was driving up and down Tropical Trail and dropping kids off to sell magazines. And it was like, and this wasn't during the pandemic time, but it was the same thing. It was like, why are kids going door to door on such a dangerous street?
And they're not in school.
And they're not in school, yeah. So I had all these questions. But even during the pandemic, there were kids that were going around and had boxes of things that they were trying to sell. And they were really dollar store little toys. It wasn't like it was anything specific that you'd think that you could really raise money for. And that was another question that I had. And I immediately called. You know, I was nice to the boys that came up, but I immediately called the police and had them, you know, just check it out and just make sure, not that the boys were doing anything wrong, but just to make sure that they were safe. Because once again, it was on Wickham Road, on a busy road. There's no sidewalks, really.
Well, Claire, you can talk just a little bit about the West Melbourne situation with the attorney.
The attorney, but let me talk about what Ellen's talking. Yes, the child sales crews are very, very real. And what they've done, too, is they've expanded to the big box store parking lots. You'll see them. They could be in the Walmart parking lots, Target, and they're coming up and trying to sell things. And so we're saying always go in and report to the manager. That should never be happening. And they are still going door to door with the dollar store items that they're selling for $8 or $10. And
what magazine subscriptions.
Yes, magazine. And they're wearing t-shirts now. They've gotten a little, and they're saying they're with a nonprofit to help teens fight drugs and alcohol. And
it's just sad. Yeah.
And so what we say is this: don't buy anything. You're not helping that child. That's all going to the trafficker, number one. Two, please offer them a snack and something to drink. I don't think they have anything at all, and they're probably charged a lot of money for food. So you can't invite them, unfortunately, into your home. We say do not do that. And then call the local law enforcement. Don't call 911, but local law enforcement is aware, and they will come out and check it out. And they go door-to-door to businesses, too. They'll take a strip mall and go door-to-door that
They're
way.
They're bold-faced, aren't they?
So, yes. So
really?
All
well,
this
kids,
money goes to the
forced.
Trafficker.
It's not like the kids are being bold-faced. The kids are being forced.
No, I mean, the traffickers,
well,
the traffickers have been emboldened.
Well, what they do is they go, they know and many of them, they're wearing a badge with their real name. And a lot of them are coming from Orlando. So the traffickers know that people need money. There's bills to pay. There's rent to pay. And they put all these notices out. And they tell the parents they're going to teach them job skills and they're going to be paid and so on. And parents turn their children over to be brought to other areas to do this. So now it's probably going on more than ever. But yes, thank you for bringing that up.
But what are some other
warning signs? There was a case here, a local case of a West Melbourne attorney who was representing a trafficker. And the trafficker was paying the attorney with children, having sex with children. And then he had the children living in his home, and then the attorney was selling them and becoming the trafficker and making money on these children. So he has been arrested, and I'm sure there'll be many charges filed against him. And the most recent case that I saw in Florida, this was in Tallahassee, it wasn't here local, but I want to bring it, to me it's shock value. For me, and I've been doing this, bringing awareness for over 15 years, they arrested 170 people, all with human trafficking charges. But when you read later into the article, it's all related to one child that was 13 and 14 years old that traced all the way back to the mother who started to sell her. And when you think about this, that what they did is they rescued the child. The law enforcement did a rescue of the child, and with help and therapy and everyone doing everything they could to be supportive of this child, she was able to go back and remember all of these people, situations, everything that happened. So now, 2 years later, they did the big bust. But think about that, one child.
Yes.
170 people.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
That brings it to what it really is. And now with the pandemic, people are wondering, you know, what's going on, and you hear those saying, well, it's now when everybody's on the computer and the virtual learning and everything, that the traffickers are on there looking for the children, which is, yes, that's true. But more than that, really, we need to be wondering what's happened to these children, because nobody is seeing them. They had teachers, they had counselors, they had the nurses, they had social services. They may have been seen by medical people. No one is seeing these children. That should be a big concern. No one is going into the home. And so we really don't know.
So
and the other thing, so what are the mothers now, or fathers, or the parents now selling them to pay the rent?
Yes.
That could be a real thing.
And you know, that is one of the greatest concern right now with the pandemic, because the children are home. And not only that, the women are now the ones who are giving the support to the children and the adults, right?
Yes.
And the women are now coming down with chronic illnesses themselves and disabilities and mental health issues. And you're absolutely correct. Some people cannot pay their rent. They cannot put food on the table. They're having issues with utilities, and they're one step being kicked out. So if someone comes says, hey, let me have your teenager for a few hours, I can teach him how to sell these cookies and come back with $50 in his pocket. I'm sure a mother's going to say yes, right?
There's so many, you're right, on the verge of homelessness, and it's very precarious.
Yeah, and that's why we all have to, you know, it's one of those things, Sita, we always say it takes a village.
Right.
You know, even more so now with this pandemic and with the changing times that we have, we're less likely now to get involved even before than we were before the pandemic.
That's right.
Before the pandemic, we were kind of closing an eye, you know, closing one eye. But now we've got masks on. Now we're avoiding each other anyway, just because of the pandemic that's going on. And there are people in human trafficking that are suffering and that are also on the other side and taking advantage of people not paying attention.
So, Claire,
so we really have to beef
you're right.
that up in the neighborhoods.
You're right. So how do we strike a healthy balance? Azanta International and Azanta of Melbourne is doing all that they can to find that balance during the pandemic to help women and children and girls and victims of domestic violence, as well as keep an eye out for the human traffickers. But where's that balance that we're looking for right now?
Sita, that's the $94,000 question. I wish I could tell you how we can get into the homes. What we're hoping for is that we have given enough numbers out, enough information out, that people can text, can call if they're in danger, if they're in fear, their connection, or send messages on the internet. Maybe we can all try. I mean, really, my guess is when the statistics come out, because the only statistics we have for the human trafficking are for 19, which come out after June, and we don't have them for 20. And I don't know what those statistics are going to be, but I know they're probably going to be at least double what they are for 2019 for calls to the human trafficking hotline, which were 1,887. And out of those, there were 640 actual human trafficking cases in Florida.
Right.
Because Florida is number three in the number of calls to the human trafficking hotline, and it's one of the top states, right, for human trafficking.
Well, because of the transition, because of the ports that we have.
Right.
Hospitality being the number one industry typically allows for more ability to have rooms and have places and things for illegal activity.
And that's another thing that concerns me now with all the new standards for hygiene in the hotels, where a lot of this goes on. Now, all the disinfecting that happens when the new person goes in the room, no one's coming in the room. Until when you're done, then you're leaving, then they're going to come in and mm-hmm. disinfect it again. So
there's no evidence.
One's going to be checking or knowing what's going to be happening.
We have a few minutes left, and you said something in the beginning of the show before we went on air that we're all concerned about the stranger out there, right? But we want people to be aware that it's the person in your home that sometimes can be the biggest enemy.
It's the trusted person. Unfortunately, a lot of it starts with parents. It could be sibling. It could be teachers. It could be the priest. It could be anyone you invite into your home, friends, someone that comes to stay in your home, a distant relative. There is someone, and parents, unfortunately, are a big part of this. It's someone that you know, that you trust, that you don't think would do this to you. And in the beginning, it's all good. They can we say it's kind of more of the romance. They buy you things, they bring you things, they get you in a state, okay, and then now's the payback.
Right. And so right now, with, like you said, with children not being able to go to school, they can't talk to a social worker, they can't speak to somebody. What other avenues are there? Because the everybody is at home on top of each other and watching what each other is doing. I always remember that case where somebody wrote on the pizza slip, "I need help."
Yes.
You know what? I mean, we have to get creative with this at some point.
We do have to get creative. I know that law enforcement is doing everything they can when they get calls, and I'm sure there are a lot more calls about domestic violence that are happening. And we just do have to work together and come up with some creative ways to help the women and children in the home.
Right. Someone sent me a few steps this morning when they heard you were coming on from Zonta International and Zonta Club of Melbourne. Does it take steps to protect yourselves and others against COVID-19? Take deep breaths, stretch, meditate, drink lots of water to stay hydrated, exercise regularly, get plenty of sleep, avoid excessive alcohol and substance abuse, and take walks. So I would say, if you want to cope with stress and you have children at home, don't leave them with someone in the home. If you're walking out, take them with you.
Yes.
You know, because yes. I think these are little things you can do to break up the depression and the loneliness and the isolation at home.
And I saw something where two families that had always, they lived close to each other, their children had always played together, they were friends. They were tested, and then they decided they could get together, just those two families outside, and they could, the kids could play, they could have games, they could have a meal together, and they were all, it's like they extended their bubble. They were all safe within that bubble.
And there's safe ways to do that.
Yeah, there are
absolutely
safe ways
just like
to do that.
What Gary Stein had said in our first segment of the show, there's ways to social distance and do the right thing and keep everybody safe.
I think what
and
you're talking about is the pod. They call it a pod. Yeah, they extended their social bubble to a pod. Yeah. So Zonta Club is hosting this event on December 4th at 7:30. And we want to see the sky lit up to eradicate human trafficking and violence against women and girls. And we're going to share the pictures on our Facebook. Of course, Zonta is now one of the hashtags, End Child Marriage. We're also trying to get people to buy these bags, which are $10 for donation. Ellen and I would be more than willing to help, but tell us what else can we do to spread the word about these bags?
Well, what you're doing is putting it on your website, talking about it on your show, maybe where you work. Bring it there. Maybe some of the staff would be willing to participate. Maybe put up a flyer, different places that you know or businesses that you deal with. That's what we're doing, is contacting businesses and people that we know, all our friends and family, and trying to get as many bags lit that night that we literally do turn the sky orange.
Right. And this is not replacing the chocolate festival, is it?
No, and
can't have the chocolate festival this year.
No,
yeah,
we're gonna have to do tribute.
We're gonna,
and take
if
pictures.
We could figure out how to do a drive-through. Believe me,
that's all.
So, and you know, one of the things
drive-through chocolate is not a bad thing.
Yeah, one of the thing I read about Zonta, and I've always visited your site, but I didn't realize that the local scholarship is in the memory of Monica Jean Campbell, who was 16 years old and attended Melbourne High School when she was murdered by her abusive ex-boyfriend in 1990. So what is Zonta doing right now to educate our high schoolers who are home?
Well, we have the Zonta Z Club at Melbourne High School, and they're very active, and they're going to ask one day for everyone to wear orange, and they're very active in this topic of violence against women, human trafficking, and helping us to spread the word. Very, very active Z Club at Melbourne High School.
And that's zontaspacecoast.org, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And make sure that we're going to put all of this information on our Facebook page. Claire Ellis, thank you again for joining us and representing Zonta as you always have done. Sita, fantastic job again getting another two great guests, and we will have all of these shows posted on cedamediainc.com. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you next.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.